the gallon of coffee that they won't let go of, and the mess of uncombed hair. And it is at this moment, when I see these signs, that I know it is my moment to strike. Most of the time, when I plan my attack, I've learned that the trick is to catch people on their way to class moments before it begins. So this happens perfectly either in the hallway, right as we're walking to class, early in the morning, or preferably, right as they sit down. And either way, when I ask these questions, either a look of complete, utter defeat washes over them as their face turns pale, or their face turns red with rage that they spent all night working on their assignments and they managed to miss one. The thing is, these aren't lazy students. These aren't students who don't care about their grades. These are students who are trying really hard to do what's right, to make good grades. And by asking simple questions, you can throw all that confidence out the window, I found out. This situation between me and my classmates is something that is very similar to what we see going on in 1 Corinthians, specifically when Paul addresses a crisis in 1 Corinthians 15. This crisis developed, first of all, when Paul went to Corinth and established the church there, and then he has to later leave. And then when he leaves in his absence, these false teachers enter in asking questions and spreading panic and chaos. Now, taking a step back, what was Corinth like back then? Why was this such a big deal? Ancient Corinth, in my opinion, was a lot like our modern-day New York. Everywhere you looked, you were surrounded by a host of ideas, beliefs, and lifestyles, and you couldn't get away from it. And just like our New York, ancient Corinth was known for its big business economy and its really immoral lifestyles. An example of this is within the city, if you would take a look, there were numerous temples devoted to pagan gods where people would come and worship different deity after deity, god after goddess, and worship them, offer a sacrifice to them, and engage in temple prostitution. And on top of this, Corinth was known for its big business, specifically because it was where it was located. It was a port city surrounded by water on many sides. And the thing was with this, what made it so big is that in order to get to one part of the Roman Empire easier, in a more easy way, you had to go through it. So because of this, this brought people from all over the known world through this city, bringing with them all of their ideas, beliefs, lifestyles, everything they had. Now, while this explosion of trade happened, what also exploded were Roman values. This was a Roman city. So with this exploded ideas such as wealth, power, education, and self-promotion. This was all about themselves, what they could do for themselves to make themselves feel happy. Now, the church in Corinth was surrounded in this culture, so the new Christians that when Paul established this church were coming from the midst of this culture. And many, if not all, were still struggling with the influences and their past lives that they were coming from. They were the ones who had filled the temple in worship, the temples and temple prostitution. These were the ones who relentlessly chased after wealth and power, not giving a second thought to whoever they trampled on in their path. These were the ones who had been consumed by the darkness of their culture. And Paul spent a ton of time and a ton of effort bringing these people out of this darkness into Christ's light. However, we eventually see that Paul leaves Corinth to go spread Christ's gospel elsewhere. And in his absence, false teachers infiltrate the church. Now, much like my heart attack questions that I give my classmates, these false teachers begin asking similar kind of questions. They ask things such as, what if there is no resurrection? Or what'd you think about the resurrection that you just missed? Because of this, Paul spends all of chapter 15 fighting these false teachers and affirming that Christ really lived, he really died, and he was really raised from the dead. He then goes through a list of people that Jesus appeared to after his resurrection in order to show that his message had validity behind it, had proof, it had witnesses to verify what he was saying. Paul then goes on to argue that without Christ's resurrection, there is no need to live the life that they have been called to. Without the resurrection, living for anyone other than themselves just doesn't make sense. Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 15, chapters 12 through 14. Now, if Christ is proclaimed as raised from the dead, how can some of you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? But if there is no resurrection of the dead, then not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, then our preaching was in vain, and your faith was in vain. What he's saying here is that without the resurrection, their faith was powerless. But Paul doesn't leave it there. He goes on to say that Christ has been raised, and that they too in the future will have a resurrection of their own. They haven't missed it. Paul has to spend an entire chapter saying this, affirming that Christ really came, that he died and was raised, all because a few false teachers entered in, spreading something other than what Paul had preached. And now these new Christians don't know whether Christ really was raised from the dead and has the power that they heard he had, or if there's any hope for them at all. We might take a look at these Corinthian Christians and ask, how could they let go of something so easily, the truth that they knew so easily, just because of a few questions? Well, questions creeping in isn't something that's necessarily new to us today. We have people asking, what if Jesus wasn't really the Messiah? What if he was just a good man? Or what if you don't have to be a Christian to have a good life after death? What if there are multiple paths all leading to the same place at the top of the mountain? Sometimes we allow these questions to creep in and create doubt for us in our lives. Or we may start asking these questions without truly looking for the answers. Instead, we may take the easy way out and just accept what looks good on the surface. Even though doubt can lead to a deeper faith at times, if left alone, it can also fester and grow and cause us to reject what we had once known to be true for something else. Whenever I think of these questions and the effects they have, a friend comes to my mind who lost her way chasing after answers in all the wrong places. This friend of mine grew up in the Church of Christ all throughout her early life, and then in her teen years, switched over to the Catholic Church. Now, today, if you were to go to her house, you would walk into up the steps, through the front door, and in the entryway, on the right, you would see a shelf. And on the shelf, you would see a statue of the Ark of the Covenant, and then to its right, you would see a bronze and wooden crucifix with Jesus hanging from it. And then right next to that, you see a stone Buddha with a big belly. Above that, on the wall, painted on canvas, you see Japanese characters for ideas such as peace, love, or hope. And beside that, you see a framed Islamic star and crescent. I don't know what caused the initial switch, but it seems like a belief system that looks like this is a product of the culture that we're living in today. A culture that asks us questions, and if not appropriately answered, leaves us scrambling for any and all beliefs in order to try to piece together a belief system that might work for us. However, where we find ourselves is far from what God taught us and where he wants us. And this is exactly what our culture loves to see. It loves to see people who are strong in their faith, holding on to their beliefs, whatever they are. It loves to see them backsliding away from those. Once we give in to accepting something other than the truth that the Bible teaches us, we begin compromising in our actions. It goes on from there. We give ground and we give ground and make decisions and actions based on these compromises that we normally wouldn't have ever taken before. We slip further and further from where God is. Eventually, we hit rock bottom and we find out that we don't know what we actually believe or who we actually are. And we're just simply drifting on the currents that only take us to darker places. It's easy for us to say that this won't happen to us. This is only something that we see on the news. But I said that too, and it really, really got driven home when I saw people in my life going down this road. There was this guy that I knew. I knew him. I met him before kindergarten, and we were friends all throughout elementary school. We'll say his name's Eric. And me and Eric were best friends all through elementary school. Our parents knew each other. We would sleep over at each other's houses. And he actually introduced me to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which I am a humongous fan of. But unfortunately, in high school, we lost touch. But I would see him in the middle of every social gathering, every social event, and running for many different student government offices. I got to thinking about him, and he was on my mind. And last summer, I went to go visit him to try to just catch up, build back up our friendship, even though it didn't really work. Eric had always seemed like the guy who had the world at his feet. Everyone loved him, and he had all the potential in the world. But I got the sense that Eric was also the kind of guy to not take a stand for something. For too long, he had been allowing people in middle school and high school to question his beliefs and to allow these questions to go unanswered. Because of this, he was repeatedly falling into peer pressure to do things he knew weren't right, just to be accepted by those around him. I got the sense that after letting doubts fester and giving in to too many compromises, he didn't really know who he was anymore. This really, really hit me hard, because this was a guy who I thought if he had just held on to what he knew from the beginning, he would have had a really strong relationship with God. I can see him doing great things for God's kingdom. But instead, he is simply a man drifting around on whatever the people around him and the culture around him tells him to do. So how do we hold on to what we believe to be true when our culture is trying to tear that away from us? Well, there are two ways to ruin my little joke with my classmates. The first is when I tell them that there was actually no assignment, that there's not a test today, and they're in the all clear. And all that rage has to go somewhere. All that anger has to go somewhere. So it usually goes into a fist, which is slammed into my shoulder or my stomach. So even though I'm doubled over in pain, I still get the satisfaction of knowing that I had them dangling for a little while, that I had them. Now, the true way to ruin my joke is whenever I ask my questions, they give me some kind of answer like, yeah, I think I'm ready for the test. I'm not really sure about the essay part, though. Or, I managed to finish the assignment, but it was kind of tough. It took me a couple hours. This is completely different from the reaction or the answers I was expecting. So now it is my turn for my face to turn pale and to start wondering if I actually missed something, or if for the frustration in me to start building over my unfair workload that I have. My victim knows what I am about to do, and they know the reality of the situation that they are in. They are prepared ahead of time and with what they know and the answer that they are going to give. This is exactly the mindset that Paul is calling the Corinthians to have in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 27 through 28, when he says, "But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain." What Paul is telling the Corinthians is that they know what they have been taught. They know what they first believed and how Paul walked among them. When false teachers approach them with questions of doubt, they are to be ready to answer. All they need to do is just keep living for him. And this is what Paul is telling us as Christians today. We are going to encounter different ideas that try to get us to believe that everything else is false. They are the ones with the truth for us. They have the most to offer. Our culture tries to blur the lines for us in order to lead us on a slow but steady backslide away from what we believe. But Paul says we are to hold on to the gospel and hold on to God. Well, that sounds great. I mean, that's awesome. I wish we could do that, but how do we do this exactly? I know good intentions only go so far. They don't last too long sometimes. It's easy to say that no matter what, we're staying with God, but that doesn't always happen. How can God expect us to stay with him when our entire culture is trying to tear us away that what God offers isn't as good as what they offer? Well, like the perfect way to ruin my joke, I think the perfect way to ruin disruptive questions is to have an answer ready for when they come. Peter writes in the book of 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, "But in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect." Peter says that if you really want a faith that can weather the storms of our culture, you have to be prepared beforehand. You don't go to class or to work without having done the work that you needed beforehand, or at least I hope you don't. And you don't go to a baseball game to play unless you've practiced for hours on end. The same applies to this. You can't follow Jesus and lead others to him without knowing who you are following and why you decide to follow him. A question can only hurt you if you allow it. A question that goes unanswered without study will only fester and grow. God has not given us a faith that is blind, but has had light shed on it so that we can see the truth. And with this truth, we will be able to give an answer for any and every question that we have. If there are any here that feel like they have lost their way and want to come back to Christ, or if there are any here who want to put Christ on baptism, I invite you to come as together we stand as we sing.